Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Well, welcome back, and it is now or never, and this is the famous Thanksgiving show. So we're going through the details, or actually Madison and Jefferson's, and I'll even say that this was just fundamental. I don't know if this was as much inspiration by the Lord. I think it was, as much as it was common knowledge. Going through the Kentucky and Virginia resolutions, I mean, these men just they reacted like, it was almost like second nature. And the question is, why is it that nobody else understood this? Why is it that nobody else knew what to do and recognized the fact that the federal government had really violated the Constitution? Well, it comes to that, it comes from the concept of corruption. People become complacent and they become accepting of something that may be beneficial, something that presents them with something. And for the most part, the people themselves were completely ignorant to this stuff. Most people didn't really understand the Alien and Sedition Acts because most citizens were just out there living their lives. This was really, if you look at who was being affected by this, the press and the activists, which there weren't necessarily, it's not like there weren't activists, but it's not like today. It wasn't at all like today, where we have all these different myopic groups and so forth. For the most part, they ratified the Constitution and people started living their lives. Government was staying out of their business, and this intrusion was in political speech. So it was the politicians that, you know, kind of took objection. It was the press that took objection because now the press couldn't print these things. And there were too many politicians that were in office that said, we think this is a good thing because it's going to allow us to maintain our seat at the altar. It's going to, you know, help us create this corrupt monopoly. Just like we see today, and everything that you see today is just what they experienced with these Alien and Sedition Acts on steroids. How they're, you know, stuffing ballot boxes and how they're stealing our elections. They're doing everything they can to preserve their position at that mantle of power. So I can't emphasize enough, in looking at what we have for Thanksgiving, this is really the only spiritual holiday we actually have. Christmas, we will go into how Christmas was concocted and how it is all about the commercial side of this. Now, remembering Christ is always a good thing. And if somebody says, you know, we're going to celebrate, you know, Christ on December 25th, then let's celebrate Christ. But if it's about getting gifts and about receiving gifts, and, you know, it's about the commercial side of Christmas, we need to walk away from that. We really need to start getting away from that. And you know as well as I do, it is hard, if not impossible. Any of you have grandkids or kids, you know, try to tell your kids, we're not going to do this anymore. You know, I mean, your kids will hate you. And no parent wants to do that. So you have to really go to extraordinary measures to help these kids understand, to help your kids and your grandkids understand really how we've got Christmas, why we have Christmas, and why we should probably always remember Christ and, you know, let every day be Christmas instead of it being a specific day of reaching into your pocket and buying stuff for everybody. This is one of the reasons why we'll find that when we look at Black Friday, which is the day after Christmas, it's called Black Friday for a reason, because it's the kickoff of all of the Christmas sales, which is when most companies in operation turn black. In other words, this is where they make enough sales to help basically justify their existence. And so, you know, this just goes to show how manipulated we've been. But it took time to do this. It took time. So what we want to do is we want, and my whole point in everything that I do is all about challenging paradigms and helping people really understand, you know, why is it that we do this one particular thing? And so when I look at all the holidays that exist, because remember I said this Christmas is really the only spiritual holiday that we as a nation celebrate, and we do not celebrate it spiritually. This is the one name, this is the one holiday that we should really be celebrating spiritually, and how to celebrate it, because it shouldn't be about, you know, the commercial side like Christmas or what have you. And we're going to get into what it should be. Because it really gives us the heritage. This holiday gives us the true heritage and character of the United States, of America. These 13 sovereign states, as they were moving forward into this grand experience called the Union and the Constitution. So with that, what we want to do is we want to dive into the first Christmas. And this is where we, actually, before I do that, let me just say this, because it's relevant. And as you know, there is no other show that gives you the academic evidence and academic evidence-based solutions. We're the only ones that do this. We're the only ones that break. And there's lots of people that give you, you know, the story of the pilgrims and so forth. But I don't know any radio show host out there that is reading Washington's proclamation. That's what we're going to do today. We're going to read his proclamation and how we're to celebrate this holiday, what we as a nation should do. And what I want you to do, please ponder where we would be as a nation if you started actually getting other people to behave the way we should be. And where we, because I hear Christians all the time say, we need a third awakening. Okay, well, now it's time to put up or shut up. You're Christian, it's time to put up or shut up. And this is what we need to do, and we're going to get into that. But I'm just trying to go through the obligatory. So this show is also sponsored by republicreview.org. And so on Friday, we will get back into the the resolutions and Madison's notes on the resolution, because I got great feedback. I'm hoping everybody's enjoying this. And well, there's some information I want to give you on the county commissioners, but I haven't had the time to do that yet. We'll do that on Feedback Friday. So don't worry, we'll still have Feedback Friday, and we will get back into the resolutions and move towards Republic Review. So that being said, let me kind of give you this, what I would like to call a constitutional look at our Republic's first Thanksgiving. So contrary to what most people really believe, Thanksgiving wasn't just this one little thing that occurred in Massachusetts. As we reach the point in the season to come together as families and communities to give thanks, I believe now is the time to share a real historical perspective. I believe it is imperative to start with the original reason for Thanksgiving. See, what happened up in Plymouth and in Massachusetts was not an outlier, but there's a reason why we have chosen, or I should say, like I started off, the progressives a long time ago. So progressives just didn't come out of the woods in the 90s with the Clintons. No, progressivism didn't just come out of the woods with Woodrow Wilson in the early 1900s. Progressivism actually started, and the big government cabals were a part of this back in the 1790s when we were looking at the Alien and Sedition Acts. when they wanted to start protecting themselves. This is why we're kind of connecting all these dots for you. So when we get into Christmas, you're going to find out, you know, how Christmas, you know, began and how Christmas worldwide really came out of the United States. It didn't really, I mean, even though there were, well, that's for another time. I will go down that path when it comes Christmas time. The fact of the matter is, and contrary to popular belief, the first formal Thanksgiving that was conducted on the land of North America was in Virginia. This is documented in Virginia, 16 September 1619. And that Thanksgiving that the progressives have really, again, chosen for you to commemorate, because these were all Thanksgivings. And let me just say this right now. When we look at the first Thanksgiving and we look at the Pilgrim Thanksgiving, these two that we know of that I'm going to show you exist, I'm going to tell you that every state, every colony, and every regional area, it was standard that people took time for a Thanksgiving. In other words, it was a part, it was just a testament of the faith of the Christians at that time. If you understand what I'm saying, all good Christians did this. It was just like all Christians christened their home, or I should say blessed their home. Most every building in America that was erected was erected, you know, or actually it wasn't used until it was sanctified and blessed. And so we'll be right back after these messages.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me, AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so I don't want to just necessarily jump around, but what we want to do is try to methodically go through this, because I think it's important that we kind of start with what everybody knows and then point out some of the details that you don't know, and then look at the macro view of the whole history of the colonies before they created a union. So again, this is really a constitutional look at our republic's process of Thanksgiving and how when we created the republic, we created our own Thanksgiving, not clinging to the old regional traditional Thanksgivings. Because again, there were all sorts of regional thanksgivings that were applied by different faiths. The Quakers, I have no doubt that the Quakers gave thanks and sanctified, you know, their successful making it to Pennsylvania and setting up their land, because as people were coming here, they came here on charters. They came here with these contracts, and the Pilgrims is very specific to that. So, again, let's kind of look at the reason for the season. Now, the Pilgrims, seeking the right to worship as they wished, as everybody knows this, they signed, or the Puritans, let's call them the same, Puritans, Pilgrims, same, same. They signed a contract with the Virginia Company to settle on land near the Hudson River, which was then a part of Northern Virginia, of that colony. The Virginia Company was a trading company chartered by King James I with the goal of colonizing parts of the eastern coast of the New World. London stockholders financed, get this, London stockholders financed the Pilgrims' voyage with the understanding they would be repaid in profits from the new settlement. Due to a change in venue, because as you know, there was a storm and knocked them off course and everything else, and they didn't arrive when they wanted to, and they didn't arrive where they wanted to. So due to a change in this venue, by landing in the area of Cape Cod, the two groups that were on the Mayflower and the other accompanying ship, I forget the name, and, you know, I'm guilty of being bad with names. They basically, you know, said, hey, look, we're not even close to Virginia. And they weren't. And they said, okay, well, that whole contract goes out the window, because the drivers of the ship, or the captains, they failed to get us to where we were contracted to go to be able to be productive. And so now that we're landing here, you know, that old contract is null and void. And so what they had to do is they had to create, because the Puritans and this other group, these heathens they called the Strangers, the Puritans and the Strangers needed to come to a term of agreement. So they actually created a Mayflower Compact. So this compact basically agreed that they would create, I'll just call it a form of socialism, that they would all work to support the collective, that everybody would share their bounties, and that, you know, in other words, it's not every man for himself. And so they established this concept of socialism, and Governor William Bradford was elected as governor to basically institute this plan of socialism. Well, that was like in 1620, 1621, and as they went forward, I mean, they had a tough go that first winter, and as their first Thanksgiving didn't happen that winter. And so in 1622, was it? Let me, because I want to get this right. When did they, so they landed in 1620. So they had the compact signed in 1620. And so what they wanted to do was they, you know, wanted to create this socialism. And what they ended up doing was they created this thing called the Tragedy of the Commons. And actually, because this was called like a commonwealth, and all of these other governments were called commonwealths, where everything was shared. That's the whole point of a commonwealth, where you really don't have property rights. I want you to understand this. Virginia, you know, maintained this concept of the commonwealth, but it was a little unique because it was a commercial venture where property rights were important so that you could make profits and so forth, but that was a part of a mercantile system, and you were directed and told what you were to grow to make your profits. And many of the things they didn't even want to grow, like tobacco. They were forced to grow tobacco. But anyway, trying to stay out of the rat holes. The Tragedy of the Commons occurred when, and it became a normal practice when they came to harvest, that in the middle of the night or when nobody was looking, people would go out, and my guess is that the Puritans were really trying to honor, because they had these religious convictions of being honorable and so forth. I'm going to point the finger at what they called the strangers or the heathens. And so they were the ones that were going out and stealing the food so that they would have food for themselves because they didn't think that there was enough for everybody else. And in so doing, they actually caused harm to those who didn't have. And so it became, you know, a very contentious couple of years. So at the beginning, after the winter of 1622, in other words, 2 years of living under socialism, 2 years of living, because life cycle, everything that you owned and possessed wasn't evaluated until harvest. In other words, they didn't have jobs and money wasn't just coming in. They didn't have direct deposit. Their earnings came from the ground and came from, you know, their calves, whatever, you know, livestock, if they had any. And I don't think they had much because, you know, they just came on these small little ships. Anyway, the point is that by 1623, Bradford abolished the socialism. He abolished this whole system. And he gave each household a parcel of land and basically told them that they could keep whatever they produced or traded it in the ways they saw fit. It was their property. In other words, he replaced socialism with a true free market. And that was the end of the famines. And that was the end of, I'll just say, this concept of, you know, the commons and sharing everything commonly and common property and so forth. I want you to understand this. Because they weren't held to the same standards like Virginia was. They weren't being told what they could do. These people were free people up in that area. This was a new chartered area that didn't become a colony, and so they weren't indentured. They were indentured going into Virginia, but again, remember, because they didn't get them there, they considered the contract with the Virginia Trading Company null and void. And it was, you know, 100-some people. Nevertheless, this is the thing you need to take away from this, that because they actually had a free society, by the time the Constitution was ratified, the people that lived in Massachusetts, the average life expectancy was 70 years. It was like 20, almost 20, if not more. I forget the number, but it was significant. It was a significant difference between Massachusetts. Literacy was completely different. The way they governed themselves and the way they worked willingly together, not compelled to work together, they created a very symbiotic and productive relationship. And so what I'm really espousing here, folks, is when you look at it, this kind of goes down with what I basically say about liberty. And you can find this is a little quote out of my book. I'm quoting myself, but I'm going to say it anyway, because when we understand liberty and the power of liberty, this is what happens. And this Massachusetts was a good evidence of this. Civil society is wholly dependent upon the symbiosis between the fundamental principles of liberty. Those fundamental principles are free agency, responsibility, and accountability. When these principles are balanced and in harmony with the individual citizens, liberty then can act as a catalyst in elevating synergy within the community and society. These synergies will lead to stronger spiritual well-being, greater productivity, improved health, and development of wealth. And now look at what happened to Massachusetts at past the Constitution as they started moving back towards collectivism. They're back into collectivism today. But the point, in fact, is we're celebrating as a nation a regional Thanksgiving that had nothing to do with our liberty and had nothing to do with this concept that, you know, we understand as, you know, a free life and so forth. As a matter of fact, every single colony had all of this compulsion. When they went into Jamestown, Jamestown too was also founded on socialism. And so when we go through this, you know, the history of the first Thanksgiving, we're almost at a break. I'm going to just kind of gloss over this, but the first Thanksgiving was a Commonwealth as well. And in every single regional area, all of these areas celebrated. So the question is, why? Why do we celebrate that Thanksgiving? Why did somebody make this decision to choose this? And I believe that there were designs in getting people to, you know, look and aggrandize how great this first Thanksgiving with harmony with the Indians and everything else and this kumbaya, it makes people feel good. But it does not, I'm going to run out of time. We'll be right back after this.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so the Thanksgiving of the Pilgrims was truly not a Thanksgiving. In all other cases of Thanksgiving that I have ever discovered, Thanksgivings were very religious and they were sanctifying. In other words, these people that were acting in this commemoration or this, what they called a Thanksgiving. This was really a spiritual process. It was spiritual worship. It was sanctifying something that they received. So when we get into the original Thanksgiving, let me just go through this real quick to give you a contrast to the Pilgrim Thanksgiving so that you can understand why we're no longer looking at a Thanksgiving in a spiritual mind model. In other words, this paradigm that we see is a party. What the Pilgrims did was they partied and they feasted and celebrated. This is what happened on September 16th, 1619. The good ship Margaret, which was only 35 feet long and weighed 47 tons, set sail from Bristol, England, with 35 settlers commissioned to 8,000 acres, 30 miles west of Jamestown on the James River. The land was given to the Virginia Company by King James and is the current site of the Berkeley Plantation. The crew was comprised of settlers, many of whom were craftsmen who were offered indentured status to settle at the site and carve out a working enterprise out of the wilderness. the Margaret arrived at Berkeley basically on December 4th, 1619. The 35 hardy souls who had traversed the North Atlantic on this little ship for 2.5 months came ashore with their luggage, all their belongings, and the instructions from the Virginia Company required by Captain John Woodleaf to immediately conduct a religious ceremony of thanksgiving. A religious ceremony. This was not a feast, but was a simply designed to thank God for the group's safe passage. The religious service was continued on the anniversary of the landing until 1622. This was not revealed until much later in 1930 as the very first Thanksgiving, formal first Thanksgiving. Now, there, like I said, there were many Thanksgivings. And as a matter of fact, I think in all of these endeavors, it's not uncommon that the Virginia Company would direct every group to give a Thanksgiving, a religious ceremony, in giving thanks that they came here. Setting this paradigm, folks, that this was a religious ceremony. So why, let me ask you now, have you connected the dots to understand, the reason they picked this is because the Pilgrims' Thanksgiving was not religious. It was a party. It was a feel-good yay. It was not sanctifying and truly what a Thanksgiving meant by definition. So now, let's get into today's era, and let's get into this concept of what George Washington did in 1789. When George Washington created this proclamation, I cannot emphasize what they did. Washington, in this newly formed republic, abandoned the idea of commemorating bad government and commemorating, you know, the safe passage under the king to establish these little colonies and these little ventures under these different companies and charters and so forth. The fact of the matter is, a united spirit in this republic stood up against the tyrannical kingdom of Britain. And together, they created a land of liberty. And so, Congress, just to be clear, Congress unanimously, in their sessions in 1789, by the time of September, they came out and they unanimously chose and requested both houses, by the way. I'm telling you, this was unanimous. I can't think of another time where every member of Congress voted in agreement unanimously. It is that rare of an occasion. And so a unanimous Congress basically requested that George Washington proclaim a day of thanksgiving for this new constitutional republic. So I want you to understand the magnitude of what they did. They wanted to sever any semblance of, you know, this representation of these other Thanksgivings, and especially that, you know, that thing that they called a Thanksgiving that really wasn't. It was a party. It was a feast. It was a celebration. And so what we want to do is we want to actually give you this picture of George Washington, because one of the problems that George Washington had is he didn't want to be the king, so he didn't want to necessarily declare Thanksgiving on his own. He needed Congress to do this. And when Congress did, he happily decided, okay, then I'm going to write a Thanksgiving proclamation, which is exactly what he did. And so this is the proclamation, my friends, as to what they chose for this nation to celebrate and give thanks on the fourth Thursday of every month or every year. Now, they didn't make this as a standing, but this became the tradition by creating the standard itself. Whereas it is the duty of all nations, this is George Washington's proclamation. Whereas it is the duty of all nations to acknowledge the providence of Almighty God, to obey His will, to be grateful for His benefits, and humbly to implore his protection and favor. And whereas both houses of Congress have, by their joint committee, requested me to recommend to the people of the United States a day of public thanksgiving and prayer to be observed by acknowledging with their grateful hearts the many and signal favors of Almighty God, especially by affording them an opportunity peaceably to establish a form of government for their safety and happiness. Do you understand what he's saying? He is tying the establishment of this nation directly to the divine hand of providence. And if that doesn't make that connection for you, because he's talking about giving thanks to him for his favors and him giving us the benefit of this nation. He goes on and says this: "Now, therefore, I do recommend and assign Thursday, the 26th of November next, to be devoted by the people of these states." So that was the fourth Thursday, by the way. I'm going back here. That was the fourth Thursday, and that's why we celebrate on the fourth Thursday of every November, Thanksgiving. Okay? To be devoted. Now listen to this. To be devoted by the people of these states to service of that great and glorious being who is the beneficent author of all good that was, that is, or that will be. So what are we supposed to do here? Are we supposed to watch football? Are we supposed to get together and, you know, get drunk and have a great feast and a party and a celebration? Oh, everybody loves to party and celebrate and feel good. I mean, we've become the feel-good society, right? Who wants to actually take time and be humble? And who wants to take time and recognize the Lord and actually sanctify something that he's given us? He goes on and says that we may then all unite in rendering unto him our sincere and humble thanks for his kind care and protection of the people of this country previous to their becoming a nation, for the signal and manifold mercies and the favor, able interpositions. And listen to what he says, able interpositions of his providence. In other words, his involvement in protecting them. It wasn't just passive. He interposed. He got involved and assisted in the establishment of this nation. And they don't necessarily go through all of the details, but I'm telling you, it wasn't just this conclusion of the late war, like he says, because this is what he goes: able interpositions of his providence in the course and conclusion of the late war for the great degree of tranquility, union, and plenty which we have since enjoyed. He also interposed in the Convention of States, in the Constitutional Convention. He interposed. He used the Spirit to move these men and inspire these men to open their hearts and minds to him. And this is exactly what he basically says. For the peaceable and rational manner in which we have been enabled to establish constitutions of government for our safety and happiness, and particularly the national one now lately instituted. So, this whole point of what we're giving thanks and recognizing his involvement in interpositions in establishing, you know, helping us in the war and establishing the state constitutions as well as this national constitution. Folks, I don't know if you're looking at this with the same eye I am, but this right here is a very spiritual process of humbling ourselves and giving thanks. And this is what he's asking. He's asking us to commit a day of service to him. That's what he said right up there. The service of that great and glorious being. Wow. Are we doing that? No, we're not. But let me finish this and I can tell you what we should do. We'll be right back after this.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument
of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so let me kind of finish this up. And this is going back to what he said before we went into break. For the peaceable and rational manner in which we have been enabled to establish constitutions of government for our safety and happiness, and particularly the national one now lately instituted, for the civil and religious liberty with which we are blessed, and the means we have of acquiring and diffusing useful knowledge, and in general, for all great and various favors which he has been pleased to confer upon us, and also that we may then unite in most humbly offering our prayers and supplications to the great Lord and ruler of nations, and beseech him to pardon our national and other transgressions, to enable us, whether in public or private stations, to perform our several and relative duties properly and punctually. Oh, Washington loved punctuality. To render our national government a blessing to all the people by constantly being a government of wise, just, and constitutional laws, discreetly and faithfully executed and obeyed, to protect and guide all sovereigns and nations, especially such as have shown kindness to us, and to bless them with good governments, peace, and concord, to promote the knowledge and practice of true religion and virtue, and the increase of science among them and us, and generally to grant unto all mankind such a degree of temporal prosperity as he alone knows to be best. Excuse me. Given under my hand at the city of New York on the third day of October. So, for him to have written this, Congress had to have deliberated during September to actually provide this unanimous, request for a Thanksgiving. Now, folks, I want you to ponder this. What would happen if instead of spending all the money you do on your Thanksgiving, and let's just say You can actualize this, right? I mean, you can go down the path of how much did you pay for that turkey? How much did you pay for that ham? How much did you pay for all the fixings? What did you come up with on what you were going to spend in celebrating or taking this time to do our traditional Thanksgiving? Because this is important. How is it that we can give thanks or sanctify, humbly sanctify, you know, a day of fast and thanksgiving and prayer? Well, so the way we sanctify things, and we've kind of covered this before, you can sanctify things by the spilling of blood, you know, such as the sacrificial lamb, or by the spilling of blood like we did with the revolution in fighting for our liberties. And he blessed us in doing that. We were able to knock off the world's emperor, or I should say the empire that was controlling the world. So let's look at this in this concept of sanctifying through sacrifice. Because if you understand the law of fasting, what we're to do is when we fast and we do without and we sacrifice, what that means is that sacrifice doesn't really go, because this goes to Malachi, that sacrifice really doesn't go to God unless you separate yourself from what that cost would have been. So let's say you spend $200 on your Thanksgiving meal. What would happen if every household took that money and they chose not to eat that day and they chose to actually have reverence, you know, on this holiday where all things are closed, and spend the day in recognizing him and the Constitution that he gave us and the land of liberty that we have and these things that Washington talks about? If we made this day a day of true righteous sacrifice, and then instead of having that meal, because you can actualize this, you can take that $200 and donate, sacrifice it to a religious, righteous cause of helping others, to your church, what have you. Somebody that you know that's in need? I mean, this is between you and God. But Malachi says, you know, put it into the storehouses of the church, you know, so that they can take care of those who are in need. And by giving thanks and requesting in prayer and in service and helping people, a great way of sacrifice is getting out and helping people understand about the Constitution and helping them understand the blessings we've received from that. It's almost like a proselyting or missionary work, right? If we look at this holiday isn't recognizing a different God. It is recognizing our God and his hand in giving us this government. And even though we have plenty of time throughout the year to recognize, you know, our Savior's sacrifice and his atonement for our sins and so forth, we have the opportunity, and I am telling you, that this nation would be blessed. You want your third awakening? Start actually recognizing, excuse me, start recognizing and humbly exercising a giving of thanks to him instead of celebrating, watching football. You know, the only reason that they play football on Thanksgiving Day is because we watch it. Stop it. Shut it down. The way we actually, you know, shut down, because we already saw how the NFL reacted to the fact that we stopped watching it. They have taken a big hit in revenue. We need to really not have anything to do with those godless seculars that are trying to destroy this nation. And we've already talked about social justice warriors in the sports programs. Or I should say, in these professional sports businesses. So the point is, folks, where would we be if we actually took that money and instead of actually having that feast on Thanksgiving, have that feast on Saturday or have that feast on Sunday? As a matter of fact, make Sunday, you know, the day of the family, you know, celebration, of, you know, whatever, but make the one day out of year in recognizing our Constitution. I'm okay with even changing Thanksgiving to the Constitution Day, because that would truly make it so that we understood and shifted Thanksgiving from the harvest and focusing it on Constitution. I would also love to see, excuse me, I would love to see our nation finally advance to a point where we got rid of holidays, except for Thanksgiving and except for Constitution Day. And I believe that if we gave up President's Day and Martin Luther King Day, and we could still celebrate, you know, the 4th of July, because that is a significant point. But I would like to actually see, if we're going to have a holiday and we want to understand what is sacred, we should make the day of election sacred, so that every year we have an election, that nobody works that day, that businesses, everybody shuts down, and everybody has the opportunity to vote. Why do this? Because, see, government wants everybody to be busy, but they want to mandate all these other stupid holidays, and we don't take the time off. I say we shut down all the other holidays to make election day, because now you don't have an excuse not to go to the polls to vote. You see my point? If nobody can work on election day and it's a mandatory holiday, boom, it's done. And I think that we need to get rid of the primaries. Any primary in any state needs to be paid for by the institutions that demand primaries. Who are those institutions? Because I'm going to tell you, the Constitution Party, the Libertarian Party, and most of these other third parties, they don't need primaries. So I think that the parties that are requesting a primary election, I believe they should be paying for that election. And watch what happens if we make them pay. They'll stop doing it, because they won't be able to afford to pay for all of the work involved and the costs of the ballots, all of that stuff. Make them fully pay for it, because they're the ones that want it. We don't need it. We don't. It doesn't do us any service. It does them service, so that they can basically pare down and get the one person that they want. And if not, then they can shift their alliances to the Democrat or the Republican, or, you know, the opposite of their own party, to help that person get in, so that at least we have this uniparty control over as many people in office as possible. They can't control everybody, but they want to control as much as they possibly can, and that's why they have primaries. So anyway, the point here, folks, is we have an opportunity to do the good and the righteous thing. And if we want to turn America around, all it takes is getting a fraction of us to start doing this and start telling people why it is so important to have the spirit, a true spirit of Thanksgiving, not a party and celebration. That we need to look at Thanksgiving as the most sacred holiday that we truly do celebrate, because it is absolutely relevant to this nation, specifically relevant to this nation. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADD-LOCAL or visit them on the web at www.addlocal.com for custom pricing.